The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa for Jefferson State of Mind and my trusted producer, Nathan.
Good morning.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
Hey, I like the hair, man.
Oh, thanks. It's just kind of growing.
It is. So anyway, how you doing? You got enough coffee in there?
I have just enough. Just enough to give it through this next hour.
Well, your compadre always needs about two or three cups.
I've got extra waiting.
We're broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're also streaming live at KCNR1460.com. You can hear us all over the world, and we archive forever and ever. You can go back and listen to this program. Usually what, Nathan, about 10 or 15 minutes after we're done, it's usually up, huh?
It loads very quickly. Yeah, at least 5 minutes, but usually about 10 minutes.
Nice, which is a great thing. So if you want to listen at any time to any program, going back 10 years, knock yourself out. Anyway, this morning we're going to have a pretty interesting show. We're excited about it. We're going to have Mark Baird. He'll be calling in soon. We'll be talking about the Second Amendment case. And also there's a resolution here in Shasta County, for the Second Amendment and, to be a Second Amendment county. And, there's a lot of people out there that, look at the resolution to one side or the other side. And, what we need to do is we need to have something to where we follow the Constitution. Now, that is going to be discussed, and we'll be going through that shortly. But I did want to bring up something before we do, and that is that the Board of Supervisors is meeting today. I know they met yesterday also in a special meeting to hire a new CEO of the county, and I think that's really going to be great. I take my hat off to them. This board is putting in a lot of hours. They really are going overtime. From what I understand, they had a lot to read. Several hundred pages. So, anyway, it was pretty exciting. And I believe we have our caller on. We do. We have our caller on. It's Mark Baird. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm good, Terry. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. We got a little bit of rain. The snow's gone. People are sort of picking up. And here in Reading, it's not quite where you live. You get real snow up there. What's that look like up there?
Well, I don't know. It's snowing right now. It's coming down pretty hard. I'll be plowing the rest of the day, I'm sure.
Anyway, we'd like you to update us on your court case, Baird versus Bonta. I'm pretty excited about that as far as and also you were mentioning to me the other day that there's four other cases that are out there. It looks like we're going to get some more of our liberty back. So we'll just want to turn it over to you and go ahead, my friend.
Well, I'd like to tell you a little story. And the story is about the governor of the state of California, the guy that calls himself the governor. He's pretty poor at his job, but he thinks he's just the best there is. He was walking down the street just in front of about four California Highway Patrol, looked like three or four maybe, California Highway Patrolmen in plain clothes. You could pretty clearly see their earpieces and armed to the teeth. And as he's walking down the street, looking pretty smug, and his speech is always a fairly flippant manner with a bunch of reporters, he called the Second Amendment a suicide pact. And I was kind of interested in that because I would have loved to hear him. In other words, instead of just making up this jumble of words like Kamala Harris does all the time, I would love to have heard him flesh out that. that thought, how in his mind the Second Amendment was a suicide pact and whose suicide and under what circumstances. But he never does that. He throws these sentences out, and then on the tail of that, he expects the legislature, and I'm sure he's directing them, to enact more gun control. And then at another news conference, he was talking about mass shootings, and, you know, the Second Amendment could not have had mass shootings in mind when the founders enacted the Second Amendment, and it just goes on and on with this guy. And so the guy who wrote one of the bills that took our liberty away in 2010 and 2012, Anthony Portantino, is getting ready to reintroduce SB2, the bill that failed last time, that's going to make a concealed carry permit even more onerous and more difficult, and expand the sensitive places. I think it would be what the Supreme Court called, he said, you cannot take the island of Manhattan and turn it into a sensitive place. But that's what they intend to do with the state of California. They intend to make a sensitive place within 1,000 feet of a school, a park. You can't go in public. You can't go on anybody's property unless they specifically allow you to. And these are all things that the Supreme Court has abjectly and very plainly rejected. But what it does is it illustrates the point that California's permitting scheme, and I'm going to call it a scheme because it is not a method. In the eyes of the Supreme Court, a permit was designed for one reason, to ensure that only lawful citizens gained the ability to carry firearms in public. And that's the scheme that they allowed in New York Rifle and Pistol v. Bruin. They allowed a permitting scheme, and I'm going to call it a scheme because that's exactly what it is. There is no permit designed to allow you liberty. There is only a permit scheme that is designed to restrict the liberty of those that hold it and to even further restrict the liberty of those who do not seek it but are forced to in order to avoid arrest for doing that which the Constitution gives us the right to do. And therefore, California's permit scheme is most certainly a scheme because it is by no means designed to keep firearms out of criminal hands. Criminals don't apply for permits. They just do what they do, and that's why their name is criminal. Law-abiding citizens follow the law. That's why they're called law-abiding citizens. And yet this scheme is designed to make it more and more difficult and more onerous and more expensive for you to try to avail yourself of the guarantee of the Second Amendment. And when I say guarantee, that's not my word. That is the words of the Supreme Court and the words of the Constitution itself. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and that they were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among those are life, and we'll stop there just because the word life is important. Without your life, what else do you have? And what is your life worth if anyone can come and take your life anytime they want to, and you have not the means or the opportunity to defend your life? And that's why William Blackstone and John Locke and Montesquieu and Thomas Aquinas and Marcus Cicero and people throughout history have referred to the right of self-defense as the first of the natural rights. In other words, as a living, thinking being, whether you be animal or human, you will avail yourself of the ability to defend your own life if that life is threatened. Now, bears and tigers and lions do it with fangs and claws, but human beings don't have those things, and especially when you look at the way violence is perpetrated on the citizens of this nation and certainly on the citizens of this state, more and more so, because of the actions of our so-called buffoon, the entitled buffoon we call the governor. Let's just take, for example, a smaller woman or an elderly person. And when confronted with violence by a physically stronger, physically overpowering, or perhaps a better armed individual, you would not have the ability to defend yourself except for a firearm. In other words, human beings have always resorted to tools to defend themselves. And that goes for, I believe it was Locke, referred to the natural right, the pre-governmental, the pre-societal right. And we've talked about this before, where if you lived in a cave on the side of a mountain, and all you had was a stick and a rock, and then someone from on high says, well, you can't leave your house with a stick and the rock. I mean, you'd say, well, the hell with you. I can't defend myself without the stick and the rock. And I have to be able to defend my person or I won't survive. In fact, I have to defend my hole in the ground or I won't survive the winter. So I need these tools to do this, and I'm going to use any tool at my disposal. Well, the Supreme Court and our founders in the Bill of Rights, oddly enough, agree with what I've said, because they read all of those treatises, they read all of those articles, they studied the ancient Greeks, they studied the Romans, they studied English law and English common law, and they studied all of the people who professed liberty and wrote about liberty and wrote books and volumes about liberty. And that's, none of the things that are in the Bill of Rights are new. None of these things were inventions of the founders. They simply captured the best ideas of the men that came before them and knew and sacrificed their lives, their liberty, their blood, their treasure in order to form this nation. And they were enshrined, these liberties that we hold most dear are enshrined in the Bill of Rights, what the buffoon in Sacramento calls the suicide pact. And I'm always interested that when the buffoons in Sacramento attack the Constitution, they only attack the part of the Constitution where the people get things. In other words, you get the right to speak freely from your God and your Creator. It's a pre-governmental right. And because you have a mouth and a brain, no one can really stop you. They can only arrest you afterwards. And it's the same with self-defense. You have a brain, you have two hands, you have feet, you have a heart that pumps blood into your veins, and you have the ability to walk and talk and move and travel, and so you choose to defend yourself. Well, no one can stop that, but they can't arrest you for it afterwards. And so our founders enshrined these things into the Bill of Rights, those things, those freedoms that we hold most dear. And those are the only parts of the Constitution that the buffoons and liars and criminals in Sacramento wish to attack, because by constraining your freedom, you're more easily controlled. They don't ever attack the part of the Constitution where the president served 4 years. They don't ever attack the part of the Constitution where representatives serve for 2 years. They don't attack that part of the Constitution, that Article 3 that designates one Supreme Court and other inferior courts that Congress may appoint from time to time. They thumb their nose at it, but they don't want to change it, because when it falls their way, they use those things. The part that they want to attack is the part where you get to worship freely, speak freely, assemble peacefully, petition the government for redress, the part where you have the right to keep and bear arms, and that right shall not be infringed. The right to be secure in your person, houses, papers. Those are the things that the buffoon and his minions in Sacramento are always attacking. And so this case was brought to defend those things. Now, the buffoon in chief says that, well, the founders couldn't have known about mass shootings. But I have to say, you haven't read history. In fact, you probably don't even know what the word history means. Because in March of 1770, the first mass shooting occurred in the colonies, then called the colonies, and it was at the behest of the British government. And it was because of a guy who argued with a sentry in front of the customs house, and the sentry whacked him in the head with the butt of his rifle, and that made people mad, and they started to gather. And then someone threw something at the troops, and one of the British troops, in other words, the government troops, the legitimate government of the time, yelled fire, and they all opened fire on the people in the square who had no weapons with them. And so that dispersed the crowd, but when they came back the next time, they had weapons. And they were weapons that they were lawfully allowed to possess. They were personal weapons. They left their homes with their personal weapons in plain sight, and they went to protest the actions of their own government in murdering and wounding 11 of their own citizens. And the violence rekindled, and suffice it to say that it was, these guys went to court. The British soldiers went to court. A couple of them were convicted of manslaughter, and that's all part of history. But then within the next 5 years, the revolution had started when our own government, the British government, sent almost 1,000 regular troops out to the towns of Lexington and Concord to disarm the local citizens and take their powder and shot and to kill a couple of their local political leaders, John Adams and John Hancock. And they sent troops out who later fired on ordinary citizens in Lexington Green and killed some of them, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them, dispersed the rest, went on to the Old North Bridge and attempted to do the same thing. And at that point, the citizens of the town, with their personally owned weapons, left their homes, carried their weapons in public in plain sight, and resisted the tyranny of their own government, and the revolution was born on that day. And then earlier, I think it was 1775, just after Lexington and Concord, the British Navy, our own government, burned the town of Falmouth, Maine, to the ground. And they sent a letter, they sent an open proclamation to the townspeople, hey, we're going to burn your town to the ground, you have 2 hours to get out. And then later that day, military ships from our own Navy, the British Navy, opened up at 6:30 in the morning and bombed that town until 9:30 at night. And then they got off the boats and went into town, and the houses that they didn't bomb, they set on fire. And that so shocked their own government, even, that there was a reprimand for one of the captains involved, that, hey, the damage was done. And since the people lacked the means to defend themselves, they fled into the cold and into the snow, and they lost their homes, they lost their livelihood, some of them lost their lives, they lost everything they had at the hands of their own government. And then you have the buffoon-in-chief talking about how the liberty given to us, codified in the Constitution, that liberty was given us by God, pre-governmental, pre-societal, and by the way, those terms aren't mine. They are from the Supreme Court in Heller versus D.C., Cruikshank versus United States, McDonald versus City of Chicago, Zitano v. Massachusetts, Wren v. D.C., and I could keep going for a while quoting Supreme Court cases, but I don't think I need to. And those cases refer to the Second Amendment as a pre-governmental right. It existed before government existed. It is not a right, excuse me, given us by the Constitution. It is a right that we already had that is guaranteed by the Constitution. And in Cruikshank v. United States, it says that the right to keep and bear arms is completely unconnected with militia service. It is an individual right. It is a pre-governmental right, and this language is very important, and the right itself declares that it shall not be infringed. So well, buffoons and sacraments. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that in the Bruin case, that the Second Amendment, was the original text was something that was upheld, and when you get a chance, I want you to go into that, and yeah. Also go into the definitions of the Webster's Dictionary, the 1828 Dictionary, which is the language that was referred to by the Supreme Court and what they said.
Yeah, sure, I'd be happy to do that. So these cases that I'm referring to were brought in order to defend Second Amendment liberty. And yet these states, like California, continue to thumb their nose at the Supreme Court and ignore Supreme Court directive and ignore all of the directives that guarantee our liberty. And instead, they choose to usurp our liberty through their unlawful permitting schemes that they call permits. But the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association v. Bruin was a very seminal case because it finally strengthened the resolve that the court had in McDonald v. City of mm-hmm. Chicago, mm-hmm. in Zitano v. Massachusetts, in Heller v. D.C., and it strengthened those. And the Supreme Court was very clear in that New York Rifle and Pistol Association case. They said, we do not make new proclamations here. we simply reaffirm what was the court has already said in these prior three cases. And what they said in New York State Rifle and Pistol v. Bruin is that the Second Amendment means what the founders thought it meant when they enacted it in 1791, that it is not a second-class right with a different set of rules that all the other rights have, that it guarantees the people the right to carry firearms loaded outside of their homes into public spaces. Now, the NYSERPA v. Bruin case was a concealed carry case, and so the question that was addressed was concealed carry. However, it did set a standard for other Second Amendment jurisprudence. Now, in that it was a concealed carry case, the Supreme Court, in its opinion, directly attacked two circuits in the circuit court system. In other words, the inferior courts, and that was the Second Circuit in New York and the Ninth Circuit in California. Because in the Ninth Circuit, the court declared that in 50 out of the last 50 Second Amendment cases, the court found against the people and for the government. And that the Supreme Court said that will not stand up to scrutiny. In other words, it is very clear that the Second Circuit and the Ninth Circuit's intent as a circuit court is to deny liberty, not to grant justice. And so they set some ground rules for future Second Amendment jurisprudence. Any permitting scheme must be objective, not subjective. You cannot demand that people show a just cause for applying for a permit to defend themselves, because ordinary people can't show just cause over and above the average guy in the need for self-defense, because you never know when you need self-defense until you need it.
Mm-hmm.
So they set that out as an objective permit scheme. And in the state of California, the state immediately ignored that. Penal Code 26150 still says may issue show just cause. So the state of California is some that knows the court already. But what it even illustrates more so is that we cannot be placed in a position where we ask the state of California to grant us the liberty that God has already given us and that is pre-governmental, because they won't do it. They'll deny your liberty every single time because, you know, the Second Amendment is a suicide pact.
We've got about
but
two more minutes.
The long and short of it is I sued them in order to vindicate the right of the people to keep and bear arms, and the right shall not be infringed. In other words, my lawsuit is to reestablish open carry of a loaded weapon with no permit from the state of California required, no government permission, for lawful individuals to openly carry a lawfully possessed weapon for lawful purposes. That's what I'm suing them for. These are all Supreme Court precedents, and they are all very easily found. Anybody with Nexus Lexus, in fact, anybody with Google can find out that the things that I've said are true, and they're in court opinions now in three or four Supreme Court cases and several appellate court cases, and we're going to win that case, and I'll let you go to your break, and then we'll pick it up on the other side.
That sounds good, and Wynn, I know, has been writing over here, like he might have some questions to ask and some things like that. So anyway, if you have a question or a comment, 605-4567, 605-4567, of course, area code 530. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well. My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Alone.
This is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
On display now at Turtle Bay Museum, Honor, Courage, Commitment, Marine Corps Art, 1975 through 2018, featuring 36 art pieces created by Marine combat artists who documented their own experience in times of war and peace. This traveling museum exhibition is sponsored by the Marine Corps Heritage Foundation from the National Museum of the Marine Corps. Open now through April 30th. Honor, Courage, Commitment, Marine Corps Art at Turtle Bay Museum. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
It's the Ramsey Show, talk radio where debt is dumb and cash is king. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com. Don't miss This Morning with Gordon Deal, followed by the Sue McClain News Hour, Free Fire Radio, and Armstrong and Getty on KCNR.
Yeah, but what if you like beer? We're back, Jerry Raposa, Wynn Carpenter, and we're going to get right back to our guest in a moment. We have a couple of quick announcements. One being, we've decided to talk about some local people who work in the community that are citizens in the private sector and that work very hard and are very good and very service-oriented. One of them is Justino Alvarez. He works at Kia Motor. He's a wonderful young man. Goes over and above to help people when they come in. Very efficient, very good follow-through, and I just want to recognize him. He works for the service department. He's the guy that will check in, make sure everything's done right, and they have a good crew over there. But I like to recognize these young people because we seem to get a lot of recognition for county workers that seem to get, well, at least before they were getting like every week we'd hear, or every meeting we'd hear of 2 or 3 of them that just were doing a great job for being paid that good salary and all those nice benefits and stuff. And I'm not putting them down. I'm just saying that, hey, you know, gee whiz, what about the private sector?
There you go.
And the other thing I want to bring up here is that when we have phone calls that come in, and we're going to go to you, Mary, we have a little bit of trouble in a way that we can't keep two people on the line sometimes. Apparently, we're having that trouble right now. So if you have a question, shoot away.
Hi, I don't have a question. I wanted to thank you guys, and I want to thank Mark. He gets up every single day, and he has to go to work, and he's working for us. And I really appreciate him. Just say thank you to him for me.
Thank you, Mary. Have a great day. We appreciate that. So let's get back to our guest, Mark Baird. So, Mark, now, Wynn, did you have some questions there? You were...
Nope.
Oh,
I'm
you
good.
Weren't?
Nope, I'm good.
You're writing a lot.
I am.
Okay, so...
I'm just writing down a lot of the stuff they said because it's important. And,
well,
and it's information that I didn't get when I was younger.
Anyway, Mark, yeah, shoot away, buddy.
All right, so... Let's get back to the case of the Bruin case and what it established. So the Bruin case established that permit schemes are going to be objective. He can't use show just cause. They're supposed to be shall issue, so on and so forth. But what it also established, and this is even more important, and this is going to get us our liberty back in a lot of areas that we didn't have access to, quite frankly, through the courts before. What the Bruin court established was the test for all Second Amendment jurisprudence, and that is this. If the individual's conduct complies with the plain text of the amendment, as the founders understood that amendment to mean at its enactment in 1791, then that conduct is presumptively constitutional. Now, that does not mean that only the right to keep and bear arms. It also, by adjunct, applies to the arms as well. In other words, you can't keep and bear arms if arms are illegal. It doesn't do you any good to carry an arm that you can't get bullets for. It doesn't do you any good to carry a rifle that you can't have a magazine for. It doesn't do you any good to carry a rifle when you have to pass a background check to get the ammunition, and 30% of the people that apply for the background check are rejected, and the state doesn't tell you why you're rejected, and so on and so forth. And I could go on and on with that, but I think that a lot of things are going to fall because of the Bruin case, and those things are good things. The magazine ban will fall. The AR-15 ban will fall. The ammunition background check, I think, won't pass constitutional muster. The 30-round magazine ban will not pass constitutional muster, and so on. The most important thing is, though, if you can't have these weapons, who cares if you can't carry them anyway? My case, I think, is very important, and I think a lot of people forget this. If you can't carry the gun, who cares if you have it? It doesn't do you any good. If you can't carry a gun, it doesn't matter whether you have ammunition. It doesn't matter what kind of magazine you have. It doesn't matter what kind of rifle you have. But you can't carry it anyway without being arrested. So what this decision in NYSERPA v. Bruin did was it established the precedent for all Second Amendment jurisprudence, in the sense that if the plain text of the amendment covers your conduct, then that conduct is constitutional. Now, if the answer to question number one is yes, then that's it. Full stop. Test is over. You win. State loses. Government loses.
Right.
And that's the part that the Ninth Circuit and the state of California can't wrap their heads around. Now, if your conduct is not covered by the plain text of the amendment, or there is some question as to whether it's covered, or some additional investigation needs to be done to see whether it's covered, then it falls completely and wholly on the government, not the plaintiff. It falls on the government 100% to prove that the regulation they're attempting to defend was widely held and widely accepted in the founding era of the Second Amendment, which is 1791.
Yeah.
The state cannot prove those things because they did not exist.
Right.
In addition to that, if you use later history in order to make your case, that history is rejected because if it conflicts with the text and its history later than the founding period, the text controls.
I'd like to read something you wrote because it pertains to this, and I think it's brilliant. And anyway, Mark Baird wrote this The United States Supreme Court in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association v. Bruin declares the Second Amendment text plain, presumptively protects conduct which complies with the plain text of the founders as they understood the language of the day. And Webster's 1828 dictionary defines keep to hold or retain in one's possession. And Webster defines bear to carry or convey, to support and remove from place to place. And Webster defines infringed as broken, violated, transgressed. And Webster defines right as conformity to the will of God or his law, the perfect standard of truth and justice. And you wrote that. I thought that was really really brilliant, but I think that that statement explains everything you just said with some really sound backing.
It is the language that the founders understood. It is the language with which they wrote the amendment and the meanings of the words. And even Webster's 1828 isn't perfect conformity, but it was the newest dictionary that there was after the amendment was written. And it was still, it was within a couple of years of the death of the last of the founders. And that's one reason why the court assigned that period of time to the history that must apply if the state wants to defend a regulation or a piece of legislation. Because if it is the period that, that included the founders' lives, then, and these regulations were present, certainly the founders would have been able to speak out against them or for them, in order for these laws and regulations to gain acceptance or not gain acceptance. And there are only two that are even tangentially associated with the Second Amendment, and that is to write about to affray. You weren't allowed to write about arms in order to frighten people explicitly. Well, we already have laws against that. It's called brandishing. You're not allowed to carry your weapon in public and then whip it out of the holster in the grocery store and start swinging it over your head, yelling yippee-ki-yay, or whatever you want to yell. And that's already against the law, and no one disputes that, and it's probably a good idea. And the other one was, if you did write about to affray, if you did, and that's not covering law-abiding citizens, simply carrying their arms, merely carrying the weapons that they individually possess for lawful purposes, that is a person who writes about brandishing. If another citizen files a complaint, okay, this part's important because this part has jurisprudence and has due process associated with it. If another citizen was to file a complaint about you whipping out your pistol and waving it around over your head in the park every morning, and a judge heard that complaint, the judge could have you hauled into court, and then he would require you to post a bond so that while you're in the park waving your gun over your head, yelling yippee-ki-yay, that you would have a surety bond in the event that you did something stupid with your gun, you would lose your money. You were not denied the right to carry. You were not deprived of the possession of your firearm. It was not a jailable offense. You simply had to post a surety bond to ensure the rest of the people you live with that you're not going to do anything stupid while you're standing in the park waving your gun around the top of your head. So even those things did not prevent possession or carriage of weapons. Interestingly enough, here's what California is trying to do in my case, and we can get to the meat of that in just a minute. What they're trying to do is conflate regulation with the word ban. In other words, there is no such thing as an approval for the ban of an enumerated right. We seek the open carry of loaded weapons just like California had prior to 1968 and enjoyed unremarkably and largely unregulated for 150 years before that. That's the conduct we seek. The right to keep and bear arms. That conduct is clearly within the text, the plain text of the Second Amendment. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It is an activity that was enjoyed by Californians for 150 years. And in the United States, for over 200 years, there were no regulations banning open carry in 1791, none. The only regulations were surety bonds and writing about to affray. And the other regulations, which came later, around 1835 and on, were regulations regarding concealed carry, but the state is attempting to declare that they want to defend the regulations when what they're really trying to defend is a ban. And you cannot defend a ban because there were no bans on the right to keep and bear arms. Obviously, the Second Amendment proclaims that in plain text. And that is where we will trap the state. In fact, they've already trapped themselves. Because in their zeal to ban everything all the time and make you crawl on your hands and knees through barbed wire and broken glass to get some vapid, transparent permission from a single state actor who has a temper and can tell you no because he doesn't like you or because he doesn't want you to do it or because he doesn't feel like messing with the paperwork, and there's no right of appeal. Instead of doing that, we simply walk out the door and do that which it is not unlawful to do, exercise the right of self-defense through the bearing of arms in public.
Yeah, you know, I think that you've made just such a compelling argument, and it sounds to me like the state is sort of hanging themselves. But I do want to bring something up to everybody, and that is that if you want to help Mark on this Second Amendment, I know, Mark, that you guys need the money to fight this thing. It looks like it's something we can win, which I know that statement would be made, and you've made that statement before, and I've known you for a long time, and I know that you won't make a statement like that unless you really feel pretty confident. This particular fundraising dinner is going to be at the Anderson VFW Hall, 3210 West Center Street, Anderson, California. Doors open at 4 p.m. There's a no-host bar, dinner at 6. It's catered by Rockin' Pete's Barbecue, and the master of ceremonies will be Chris Kellstrom. Tickets are $40 each. A table of 8 is $300, and it includes $200 in raffle tickets, so that's a great deal. There's guns, raffle prizes, and all proceeds go to the Second Amendment lawsuit. Now, if you want to buy a table, you can send your check to Pecan at 14421 Old Oregon Trail, Suite B, like in boy, Redding, California, and make sure that when you write your check to Pecan, in the memo portion you put 2A. But it's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be some great things that will be raffled off there. And, Mark, you are going to be speaking there, I think. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I think you were planning on making me do it, weren't you?
Yeah, we're planning.
I would rather just eat and look at cool stuff if I. But
no, you're going to speak anyway. So, when we go back to this, going back to your Second Amendment case, it's been, I guess, over the last 5 years, we're getting a few victories here. But I got pretty excited when you told me the other day about those four cases that you think that's going to get struck down. Especially not going through a background check on ammunition. Is there anything else new in your case, or anything to where you really see light at the end of the tunnel?
Yes, there is. Once again, we're talking about the liars and thieves in Sacramento and the courts that they own and operate, the California for the Eastern District. Unfortunately for us, the Eastern District of California is largely filled with Democratic operatives. However, that landscape has changed, and we do still have the Supreme Court, the Article III Supreme Court, to bail us out when the liars and cheats in Sacramento and their pet courts get in charge of things. But I think that there's a lot of hope here, particularly with developments in my case, because, once again, in their zeal to ban everything and hand all power to single state actors and single state agencies with no right of appeal, California has made a fundamental error. In other words, with enumerated rights, you have to allow something to happen as the Constitution states it. And when I say you have to allow, I'm talking from the perspective of the state. Had the state looked at this in an unprejudiced way, they would have seen that they can't ban an enumerated right. Murdoch v. Pennsylvania says that. But they have done that. They've banned the right to carry weapons outside the home for self-defense. And what they've done is instituted a permit scheme, which their own courts have declared not a right. Their own courts in Peru de Tu said that concealed carry is not a right. It's a permission, and states can ban it or do whatever they want. Well, if they have banned concealed carry as a right, they cannot also ban open carry. And so that's the way we've decided to attack this. When you look at some background cases, Cooper v. Aaron and Marbury v. Madison, then you will see that the states are subservient to the United States Supreme Court when it comes to legal dicta. When you look at constitutions of all the states, at least the ones formed after the Civil War, in their enabling acts, they all have clauses. California's is Article 3, Section 1, that says that California is an indissoluble part of the Union and that the United States Constitution is the highest law in the land. So after the 14th Amendment was enacted, all of the states that were formed, their legislation that formed the states, says this. And it's also in their state constitution. Now, if California didn't like that, the time to fight it was then, not now. And you can't ignore what's in your own constitution, particularly when it's affirmed by the United States Supreme Court, and particularly when your own circuit court, the Ninth Circuit, declares certain things to be true in Chambers versus United States. Anything that happens in the Ninth Circuit, all judges in the circuit are bound to follow that law. So the state has declared that concealed carry is not a right, therefore open carry must be, because you can't ban an enumerated right. The text, the plain text of the amendment says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Let's take the case now. We go into the district court, which is California for the Eastern District, run by Judge Kimberly Mueller. We're well familiar with her, been in front of her many, many times in either drug cases or our county's been in front of her for drug cases, and the Citizens for Fair Representation case, and now this case. We know how Mueller operates. Well, Judge Mueller is a better lawyer for the state than the state's attorney. So what Judge Mueller said was, we raised some serious Second Amendment claims. She also said that the state is unlikely to succeed on the merits, in the merits phase of the trial, because they've banned an enumerated right. In other words, they're not trying to defend the regulation. They're trying to defend banning an enumerated right. The state does not admit to doing that, but that is what they're doing. Their entire brief defends concealed carry. But what they should be doing is defending the ban on the enumerated right, because that's what we're trying to attack. They don't. They can't defend that. There is no defense for that. There were no bans on open carry in 1791. In fact, no ban on open carry has ever stood the test of time in court. None whatsoever. There is no history. There is no textual dissertation they can allude to. There are no regulations that withstood court testing regards to open carry. The only regimes that ever stood the test of time was concealed carry, and even those are questionably lawful. Now we get to... Go ahead, Gwen.
Real quick, there was a caller that wanted to know if they could purchase a whole table at that event that you guys are doing, and with a credit card.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes, they can.
And what they can do, you can give them my number... keep them on the line there, or have them call.
Get their number.
Yeah, get their number, and I'll call them. That's
there
better.
Go. There you go.
Okay. All right. So now we get to the case, and Judge Mueller, of course, decided against us for the preliminary injunction because she said that we failed the Winters test, and the Winters test is some other that was an environmental law foundation against the Navy. They claimed the Navy was using sonar to kill whales, and they wanted an injunction, and the court found against them because they said it was more important for the Navy to win future wars than it was for the Environmental Law Foundation to win this lawsuit. But what that did was it set a set of circumstances for you to succeed on a preliminary injunction. You have to be likely to succeed in the merits and a bunch of other stuff. Well, the Bruin case said one other thing. It established the Bruin test. Does the plain text comply with the individual's conduct? If it does, full stop, end of discussion, plaintiff wins. Well, the judge ignored the Bruin test, used the Winters test, but then failed to use the Winters test because even she admitted in her discussion on the record that we were very likely to succeed in the merits of the case. But since we weren't in the merits phase of the case, we had to pass the Winters test in order to get a preliminary injunction. Well, success on the merits is the most important part of the Winters test. And what it also, what she also did was she failed to demand that the government defend their position with regards to bans enacted in 1791. And obviously, there was no ban on carrying a weapon because the Second Amendment says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The state cannot defend the ban. They're trying to defend as if it were a regulation, as and it isn't. So Mueller denied our preliminary injunction. We immediately filed that to the Ninth Circuit. And I wish I had time to read this brief because it is absolutely wonderful. We point out every hole in Mueller's dissertation. We point out every hole in the state's case. We point out the fact that they're trying to defend a regulation with a, they're trying to defend a ban with a regulation, and it just I just don't have time to read it. It's 25 pages, but if you want to look that up, look up courtlistener.com, and then look up either Baird v. Bonta or Baird v. Becerra, and then you'll find that paper. And please read that because it's really important. We're going to win. We are going to win. We need an intellectually honest panel of judges, even in the Ninth Circuit now. That's not impossible. We could win in the Ninth Circuit. If we do, the state will no doubt ask for an en banc review. But if the preliminary injunction is awarded to us, you and all the people in California, thanks to the people of the state of Jefferson, who have very generously helped me fund this case, you will have regained your liberty. And if you'd like to get some more of it back, help us.
You know, you would think that Judge Mueller was a neighbor of Jerry Brown's.
She is a neighbor of Jerry Brown's. And she's buddies, and she's buddies with the buffoon in chief too.
Well, also too, you know, I love on that on the federal court building, one of the plaques that's there says, "Justice delayed is justice denied." And yet, yeah, here we are, justice being delayed and seriously being denied.
Well, it's very interesting. In the Moonlight Fire case, the judge was so angry at the government lawyers and California's lawyers and the federal attorneys in charge of that case. He was so angry at them, he dismissed all of them from the case when he said that it is more important for the court to find justice than it is for the state to win a case. It's
Amen.
More important for the court to find justice. Well, guess who overturned that settlement?
No.
Mueller. Are you kidding? She did.
No, Judge Mueller. She overturned the settlement because she said that, yeah, what the state did was unlawful and illegal, but Sierra Pacific, well, you already signed it, so now you're in the deal. It's too bad.
There's a special place down below for her.
Yeah. We have 2 minutes.
You know, I don't know about any of that, but I know it's wrong, and I know that our job is to right that wrong. And I am open to questions or debate from anybody about this. And nice. Like I said, don't take what I say as gospel. Look this stuff up. It's all public records. It's all in the history books. It's all in the court listener. It's all in the filings and pleadings of Satano v. Mass, McDonald v. City of Chicago, Heller versus D.C., Nyserpa versus Bruin. All these things are there. They're easy to read. Yes, they're not. It's not fun reading, but if you really want to know, look these things up. So what I'm saying now is the state of California is wrong because they have banned our right to self-defense, and it will not stand. And now, since they've demanded that they ban everything, now we're going to have unfettered access to the Second Amendment, no permission required. If you're a lawful individual, strap on your gun and leave the house, just like you had the right to. Isn't that funny?
Well, Mark, you've been fantastic. We're looking forward to seeing you on March 11th, probably see you before then. And, folks, if you want to pick up the flyer on the Second Amendment court case fundraiser, you can pick up the flyer and pick up the information at Jones Fort. You also can pick it up in Cottonwood at Woody's Barbershop. So with that, my good friend, thank you for everything. Thanks for all your hard work. And when?
The time has come.
Yeah, for 51.
Thank you, Mark.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.